Eric, do you remember when there was that season where 2000, whatever it was, where both Joe Davis and Oral Hershiser were just waiting for Hyunjin Ryu to hit a home run?
Yeah.
They just kept calling it. They kept saying it. Every single start, they said it was going to happen. And it happened the last start of the year.
Yeah. We were at that game and did not see it because we were in the reserve section in the behind the seats. So we only saw it on TV, but
we
felt it.
We got it out of the way. We have a 3-inning save within 3 games of our podcast being around.
It happened.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was.
So even if we like I said, we didn't see it live, we felt it though. We were like, wait, that was Ryu. Oh my god! And then like there was an energy to the park that day, and that's the energy.
I might have ran to the field to watch him finish running the bases.
Yeah.
Anyways. So that's the highlight of opening week, series, I think.
So here, it's no question it is, and probably the highlight of the season, I think. It's going to be hard to top unless they win it all.
Or they do it again.
Whoa. Well, I got some quotes because, so the fun part is that's the only game I didn't go to of the series.
Always.
Because I was at my brother's birthday party, and we just had some fun. We were watching a lot of Final Four basketball with, I might add, some San Diego State fans, which made for, I'm sad we did not record this on video because the reaction to that final shot was so great. It was like, there's 2 seconds, you know, like, and then,
and then
it was my nephew's wife is a San Diego State alum. So we were all kind of rooting for that because of her. And, but as soon as he hit it, like almost the entire room just screamed so loud, like at each other, but like in a wildly positive, euphoric way. And it was so great. And I was like, oh man, that felt awesome. Like, and I didn't even have a skin in the game, you know, like it was just great. And that's basically how I feel, how I felt learning only within an hour of that, I believe, roughly, that Andre Jackson was going to have 3-inning save. I was like, oh, this is happening. And then, but to top it all off, I went to the Sunday game. We're recording this on Sunday night. Hanging around in the clubhouse Sunday morning, and who walks in but Andre Jackson? It's not like he wasn't going to show up, but like I'm happy that he was in there when me were in there, and I just went over to him, and we had a nice conversation for 10 minutes.
I want to hear more about that conversation, some of the answers you got to questions. We'll break all of that down, the highs, and there were a lot of highs, and unfortunately a couple of stinker lows thrown in there, and then we've got some questions from Craig after this.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. I think somebody tweeted at you before I could. I know a lot of people did. But I believe my text message was the second message sent to you that I'm aware of.
I think you're right. You might be the first one I saw.
Okay. Yeah, because... I believe my message was three inning save red alert.
Oh, yeah, okay. And then, so...
An homage to Bob Timmerman's... Cycle alerts. Catcher,
or no, and also catcher's interference, the CI alarm. That's an alarm, not an alarm.
Yeah. And then red alert, I'm going to count Andre Jackson coming in the seventh in a, you know, whatever it was at the time, 9-1, I think, at the time game. Yeah.
And so to give you a further hint of where I was at, not, I was at my brother's, we're watching basketball, but, you know, just watching basketball. Like, so I was like following along, like it was, and I think early, like Trace Thompson hit the grand slam early in that game and it was kind of put away. So no one was really paying attention to the Dodger game, you know, and it wasn't on. So we were just like, oh, let's check how this is going. Like, oh, Trace Thompson hit another home run. And then like, this just kept happening and I didn't even think much of it. And then I saw your thing and then I went on Twitter and like a few more people had like messaged me and I looked and he was like, he pitched the seventh and I was like, oh, this is happening. Like this is going to happen. Like, this is so good. And so I was, you know, I was paying attention in that way. Not to the point where I like turned the game on. Cause we were watching like the end of UConn Miami, I think. But
it's also an easy thing to follow. Not actively.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a 10-1 game is not like pins and needles. Well, it might have been for me if I was watching, but like, So again, I go in Sunday morning, you know, I would say generally there's, when media's in there in the clubs, there's not always players available. There are some, you know, but like, I think, but also like Sunday morning is probably the worst time to do it because usually it's like later arrival. There was no batting practice or anything like, so it was very limited, like pregame work. And so and maybe late reporting as well. And like, you know, allowed late reporting. But so it was my great fortune that Andre Jackson was in there. And I had talked to him, I think previously, like, I can't remember if it was opening day or the day after, because he changed his uniform number. I asked him about that. So we were just talking. And so I went up to him and just started talking and we were talked about a lot of stuff. One of the guys on UConn basketball is Andre Jackson Jr. And I asked him about him, like, do you follow him? And he's like, not really, but there's been people who like tag him. I was looking on Twitter. I couldn't find, so it's probably on Instagram, but like anytime like that guy does something, he gets like tagged on stuff. So that's pretty funny. But so we were talking, I didn't like, you know, it's very, I guess it could be a little embarrassing to be like, hey, I'm the freak who likes three inning saves. You know,
I was going to ask you, like, does he have idea that you're the freak that likes three inning saves?
It came to that. I explained to him like why I really like three inning saves. It's kind of a weirdo thing, you know, all this stuff, but like just introing into it, I was just sort of talking about how he got to this role and like what, you know, how sort of funny it is. He's pitched in 8 major league games in now parts of 3 seasons and he has 3 inning saves. Like, it's just this weird confluence of events that has led him to this. So it kind of started his, like, he really struggled in the first half of last year in AAA, like more walks and strikeouts, ERA over 6. And then like in mid-June, they sent him to Camelback Ranch, just kind of reset. He went there for a couple weeks. And he said he was working on stuff, like specifically, I think his fastball. But also like mentally, he was working on trying to like figure out how to sort of regain like control. But like he said, he was working on his focus and also breathing techniques, like to, he described it as resetting between each pitch, you know, to like he just felt like he was losing control on the mound, like, and not like pitch control, just like just you know, his like faculties almost, like, in a way, in a, not maybe not that severe, but like just he was just trying to get his confidence back, I think, and he found it. So he sort of improved for like the next 2 months in AAA. It culminated when they were like in a heated pennant race with, I believe, Round Rock, Oklahoma City was. And in a close game in Round Rock at the end of a series, he had a four-inning save in AAA, which I was intently watching on MILB TV. And and that was a close game. I believe the final score was like 5-3. And he pitched really well. He got called up to the majors right after that. And he was like, you know, he didn't pitch a ton in September, but he was like, anytime they called on him, he did really well, just kind of like what he did the year before. And then he had the three-inning save on the last day of the season. But, yeah, he said that four-inning save in AAA, he said, quote, that was kind of the game that got me back here to the majors. And then carried that over into the spring, pitched really well, made the opening day roster as, like, the long man, which the Dodgers have had a few. It's usually, like, an extra starting pitcher or something. Maybe in the bullpen. I know last year, like Tyler Anderson, I don't think he really counts because last year was weird because they were also piggybacking to start the year and he got a rotation spot pretty soon. But like, I think Jackson, at least for a little bit, his real role is going to be like actual long relief, which they haven't had a ton of. So I was trying to explain to him, like, I came to like three inning saves because of the freak games. Like I told him about the 30-3 game, like whatever that was, like 15, 20 years ago now, Rangers Orioles. And there was a guy who pitched, had a three inning save in that game. I said, well, that's amazing. So I started liking three inning saves. Then I grew to appreciate it because there's like, even in like a blowout, there's value in it because usually, especially the way bullpens are used nowadays, where everyone is like pushed to the max and it's like usually one inning at a time. So you end up getting like a tired bullpen or on most days you might have like four of the eight pitchers unavailable or three of the eight or something like that. So anytime someone can come in and like soak up a bunch of innings, even in a like a bad situation or a lopsided situation, it like it helps in some way. So like it's not like this, I mean, it is weird still, no question, but like, so he got where I was coming from here.
Did you tell him that's the name of the podcast?
I did not yet, but we were talking, like, so it's he knows where I stand. That was pretty clear. So, but I did. So I explained to him also the one fun quirk about being in the early season before Sunday's game. So the Dodgers to that point had played three games, and how you qualify for pitching leaderboard is you have to play one inning per team game. So because he had a three inning save, he entered Sunday leading tied for the National League lead in both ERA 0. And saves one. So that doesn't happen, you know, really. So, you know, he had those three, three inning saves in his eight games, one each in 2021, 22, and 23. Like the last Dodger to have a three inning save in three straight years was Alejandro Pena. I asked him if he knew who that was. He said, not really. But this was my favorite quote of his in our conversation. This is Andre Jackson explaining his sort of history with three inning saves. That I didn't even know a three inning save was a thing until I got the first one. I didn't know the rules behind that. It's funny being in a role now, I probably have more opportunities for that to finish games out. And you can imagine when he said that, I'm thinking, well, let's just set a record. Let's get like 15 three inning saves. And then he's basically the MVP at that point. Like, so let alone, I mean, Cy Young given, but like, yeah, like we're talking, I don't know, but I would be remiss. We are the three inning save podcast. Andre Jackson's three inning save was not the first in the majors this year. There was one earlier Saturday, and it was by the Angels in another blowout. Tucker Davidson, he pitched the final four innings of a 13-1 rout. So I guess technically Andre Jackson did have the first three inning save. We're not the four inning save podcast, but so yeah, like just and generally, I would say over the course of the first weekend, the Dodgers played the Diamondbacks for four games. The Dodgers pitching overall was excellent. Their starting pitching, especially, like All four starters went at least six. They allowed four runs in 25 innings. Like, everyone was really good. Even the bullpen was good. Like, they had a couple blips, right, where, like, Alex Vesia gave up a double and a home run to a couple right-handed pinch hitters on Friday. He was really good against righties last year, like, generally. So I think that's just one of those weird things. And then Bruiser Gratterall came in Sunday in a tie game and didn't have command at all. He gave up one run. He probably could or should have given up more, but Mookie Betts threw out a runner at the plate. Mookie Betts started that game at second base, by the way, and then moved to right field later. So it was just like a very odd, weird weekend in that way. But I think mostly it was odd because of the offense. It was very Jekyll and Hyde. We mentioned the Trace Thompson thing, where I guess we didn't mention specifically, but on Saturday in the Andre Jackson game, as some might call it, Thompson hit three home runs and drove in eight. So I did find, because Josh Thomas, who writes at Dodgers Digest, he asked me something and I looked it up because I ended up not writing about it, but like I did find this. So the Dodgers have 28 three home run games in their history. The only other one that happened in a game with a three inning save was I think 2016. I can't remember if it was 2016 or 2017, but Corey Seager was the three home run hitter, and Brock Stewart was the three inning saver. So that was fun. Will Smith was really good on opening day, drove in four runs. He homered Sunday. He's like 5 for 11, really good start. James Outman has looked really good so far. Good plate discipline, got the home run in the first game. Also got the Dodgers' first steal of the season on Sunday. He looks really good in center. Miguel Vargas, he started the first three. He pinch hit on Sunday. He's only 2 for 5 this season. Only 2 for 5 is hitting .400, but he has 8 walks, and we'll get to that stat in a little bit.
Huh?
But it's been fun. Well, it's funny with him because he had the hairline fracture of his pinky just in spring training, and they wanted him to get reps at second base, so he was still playing in games. So his first 6 spring games, he batted twice in each game. They said, okay, you're going to bat. You're not allowed to swing, but we want you to play defense. So he still walked like 4 of the 12 plate appearances during that. And, it's not like that necessarily unlocked something. I mean, it may have, but he's just been really good overall since then. But he was like a really good hitter anyway. But it's just a funny little quirk, I think, that has 8 walks in 4 games. So the Dodgers, they scored 18 runs combined Thursday and Sunday, 8 on opening day, 10 on Saturday, excuse me. They lost the other 2 games of the series 2-1. So the perfect recipe for 2-2. Do you want to guess what their Pythagorean record is, or Pythagorean winning percentage?
How quickly can I do math?
I will give you the inputs, not that you're going to type it
in. Is it like 750?
I will tell you first, it's 20 runs scored, 7 runs allowed.
Yeah, so is that 800? Is that 800?
I'd like to know which one is your final guess.
780.
So if you transpose the first 2 numbers, you're close. It's 872.
Okay.
So, which is a ridiculous number, obviously. It's just, again, 4 games, whatever. But it's also like what we sort of, not like what's what we talked about, but like, they were up and down, and we went into the season thinking, hey, this might be an up and down team. it's weird because Dave Roberts has mentioned, like, he had a quote. I didn't end up including it in like the week in review, which is going to be up on True Blue LA on Monday. But he sort of mentioned like how he didn't like the term volatility necessarily with the roster, how it is, but he did mention with like the younger guys, like, or guys with limited service time, there is more volatility compared to like the back of the baseball card veterans. But like in the early going, like Outman and Vargas have been really good. And, Max Muncy, Chris Taylor, have struggled. Austin Barnes is like 0 for 5 or whatever. That's whatever. It's not that big of a deal. But it's just like, it is funny how that can change, like in an instant, in such a short like sample size. But that's sort of the nature of the beast. And that's also what happens in the postseason. So it's like, there's never really a satisfying explanation when something goes wrong. It just does. So you just try to, you figure it out. But like, I don't know, there were still some pretty cool things. Were you able to watch like the games over the weekend?
I think all of the first three and then the last few innings of today. I had my fantasy draft, very important, belated, I know, after the season started, but wasn't able to completely pay attention during that.
Wait, did you pick any Dodgers?
As most non-serious fantasy player, I take it somewhat seriously, but I'm going to get my guys, you know?
Yeah.
Excuse me. I walked away, I believe, with 4 or 5 Dodgers of, you know, 29 players.
So it's been...
Do you want to guess who I drafted on the Dodgers?
Well, you already told me one off air, so I'm taking that as a bingo free card, which is Clayton Kershaw.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing...
At a steal. It was an auction draft, so...
Okay. I was going to ask auction or salary. It's been so long since I played fantasy baseball. We used to always use the Sporting News fantasy annual, whatever, and whatever those values were. It was like the $276 scale for like maybe it was 23 players or something.
Yeah. Still 2060 for us, even though it was 29 players.
Yeah. So, okay. So your other ones, did you go Max Muncy?
I did get Max Muncy.
Did you also go? Did you go James Outman?
No, I have a waiver claim on him because I have one IL player. So,
what about Dustin May?
Dustin May.
Wow.
Well, look at you.
I only have one other guess that it's not even that I feel strongly about it. But what about? I was trying to think of like. Potentially value guys, because obviously Mookie Betts, it could be Mookie Betts. He's like probably $50 or $40.
I will let you know you got the three value guys that I was targeting, and you got all three that I was targeting, and Kershaw, May, and and Muncy. And one more Dodger though, not a value play.
Okay. So in that case, well, the first instinct I had in this before was going to be Will Smith, so I'll just say Will Smith.
No,
was it Freeman?
It was Freeman. Yeah. He was the last kind of like tier A and a half player left. After I was a little gun shy early on. So, you know, and that's the thing. It was like, I'm not going to pick the Dodger because they're the Dodger, but if I'm in a tier list, I have them the same as someone else. It's fun to get guys that you want to root for anyways. So
I remember we tried switching up to an auction, in our sort of little fantasy league that we had, which we were kind of running ourselves anyway, but I don't know, we weren't like super experienced in it, but like there also wasn't like a ton of us. There was maybe 8 teams in the league or something, but it came out to the end where I believe the first year we did it, it was like, you know, one guy ended up having like, I don't remember the situation, but I mean, it was something like he had he was like the only guy with like outfield spots left.
Yeah.
And so he got like probably 3 really good players for like $1
because
none of us had, you know, could do it. Like, so it was stuff like that. And we were like, okay, we need to figure this out. But like,
well, speaking of games and baseball,
what? Oh yeah. So, or actually speaking of one of your fantasy players, Clayton Kershaw, he was on the field. He didn't pitch opening day, but he was on the field for pregame stuff because, they had all 5 living Dodgers Cy Young winners all at the stadium together. So Kershaw didn't throw out a first pitch. Sandy Koufax didn't throw out a first pitch, but they were there. Oral Hershiser, Fernando Valenzuela, Eric Gagne did. Eric Gagne is taller than I remember. Not that I had an experience. I only watched him on TV, obviously. But man, well,
he's slimmed down a bit, right?
Oh, for sure.
So that probably helps, you know.
Yeah, because he, instead of being like the stocky guy.
Yeah.
He's just giant man now. Like, but that was actually really cool because they did play "Welcome to the Jungle," like a long version of it, like introing him. So, and that was a kind of fun little thing. But the 5 of them, the 3 of them threw the first pitches. And then Koufax was like right there on the field. And then so was Kershaw. So they had a nice picture with all five of them. I thought that was really cool. So later in the game, I generally I'm obviously anti fans running on the field.
Yeah.
I just thought this was funny because I was mad because I missed it because I was like, I think I was writing something and you know, like the between innings, like music and stuff's going on. So I don't know that something's actually happening, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm just writing. And then I saw someone tweet and then I looked up and they're like carrying this guy off. Mm-hmm. And I said, when subsequently saw the video, he ran out from like the pavilion, like, you know, however many, like what, 75 feet maybe yeah. in and that most. And then he turns around, gets on a knee, like, and is talking back to the pavilion and he's trying to propose. And right. He did. I don't know what he got out, but he's basically like holding his ring out there on the knee and then wham, just gets just absolutely hammered, tackled
the word security. You used in the show notes is the word I have been trucked. Using to describe this as trucked. He got yeah. trucked.
And it was like, he just folded down like to the ground.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I'm against fans going on field. Probably excessive force, right? Like, yeah. I don't know if you have to absolutely truck them, but.
That said, in the spirit of like, you know, this is like one of those back in the 90s, they would sell, and maybe even later than that, they would sell like the, you know, ooh, the roughest hits, you know, yeah. they would be like one of those things. Like, but the funny part to me was the video that was from behind. From like say the infield or something in that point of view where Lourdes Gurriel is in left field for the Diamondbacks and he's like watching it. So you sort of see him watching it and then he's putting his hands up. Then he flinched when the cackle, he's like, oh no, you know, just like,
yeah, his hands are like, yay, a happy moment for, you know, who knows what he's going on his head, but
sure.
It to me appears as like, hooray, a proposal. Oh no.
Yeah.
And then it's the flinch and then he has his hands on his head. Oh yeah, wow.
He's like contemplating life at that point. Like what is happening? But I guess the ending to that was the woman he proposed to did say yes. I believe, that's about it. Who cares about the rest? But anyway, Dodger Stadium also has new LED lights, which they've used. It's to be a little more like showy. And what I've discovered in the three games I went to using those lights is I am an old man and I don't care for them. they like darken everything. They shine specific lights. I mean, the technology, great, it's cool, whatever. There were a couple snafus on opening day, which were funny. It seemed like more, it's like they weren't trying to do this, you know, to like mess with the other team. It just sort of happened. I think it was their first night. They're like, oh, we got to do this. So I think Will Smith, I don't remember if it was a single or a double, but it was a hit to right field that drove in, I think, two runs. And as the ball's in play, they start doing the light thing. It's like sort of dark. And they're like, we're trying to field the ball. Like, what are you doing? Right. And then later, when a reliever came in to warm up, it was between innings. So they're like doing full darkness on the field with like, and then the home plate umpire is like, what are you doing? He's like motioned up and like told him to turn it back on. So that was to me was kind of funny. It was a little more streamlined, the rest of the series, but it was still, it's something to get used to. But I just, it's one of those where I, over the years, I've just decided like, oh, okay, this isn't for me. Yeah. that's great. But it was kind of neat, like in a way. Back to Miguel Vargas. I don't believe they did any light shows after one of his walks, but
speaking of games in baseball.
That's the king of the segue. Jacob Burch. So Miguel Vargas did not start Sunday, as I mentioned, but true. He did pinch hit and he walked. Again, that gave him 8 walks in 13 plate appearances. The 8 walks tie a Dodgers record for the most in the first 4 games of a season. My question to you is, who did Vargas tie? And knowing that you will not get that, because no, I wouldn't have got this. My other question, who is one walk behind them?
I'll say a wrong answer, but then I will have trivia for you from Craig and more questions from him after this.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What player did Miguel Vargas tie with 8 walks in the first 4 games to start a season? I have a guess.
Yep.
I have one guess.
Yep.
That's not it. I'm not going to list any more names.
Yeah. Okay.
You may try to hit me. I may or may not take. Yep. We'll see.
Yep.
Kyle Hodges.
So he was the one who I believe Miguel Vargas broke the record for most walks through 3 games.
Counting
it. Kyle Hodges had 6. So you're definitely that. You should count that. Kyle Hodges had 6, and then he didn't walk in the 4th game. But
what a this is Kyle Hodges' fault.
Yeah, but Roy Cullenbine, an outfielder in 1940, had Jacob is walking off. So Roy Cullenbine had 8 walks in the first 4 games of the 1940 season. Everyone talks about it to this day. There's another person with 7. Right mm-hmm. behind them, I will tell you this. My hint to you, or 2 hints. One, this person is not in the Jacob era, but is in the Jacob life era, and this person was on The Simpsons.
Oh, Steve Sachs?
No, it's funny if you think about that. No. I'm going to give you another hint.
Daryl Strawberry.
Yes, that's my answer. It's Daryl Strawberry. I was going to say, okay, Skip. But yeah.
Yeah, so, I was like, left field, because I can do that whole team.
I started laughing because I was like, oh man, I guess he was a Met when they were. No, was he a Dodger when they recorded it? Man. Maybe not. But like, because he was with the Dodgers in 91. That's. I'm looking here. When did he did it in 93. But anyway, so.
And then technically Don Mattingly, you know, also.
Oh, right. So, yeah. But three Dodgers players in that Simpsons lineup. That's wild. I wouldn't have thought of that.
That's definitely wheelhouse trivia for me. Homer at the bat episode. Start memorizing the entire Mr. Burns old timer player.
Oh,
he has the team he wants to put together that has like 3-finger Mordecai Brown. And I think Old Hoss Radburn's on it.
I need to rewatch that. It's been a little while.
It's obviously so good. A classic. And there's a really good oral history of the episode somewhere on Deadspin or somewhere.
Speaking of that, how was Oral Hershiser not on that team?
Because they had a guy named Roger Clemens as the pitcher.
I guess.
Clucking like a chicken.
7 Cy Young Awards. Whatever.
I have dramatic pause. Trivia question for you. Based on the works of a different Dodger rookie this season, because it's starting off, it's time for
Questions from Crit.
James Outman homered in his first opening day game.
That's true. I got it right.
Outman, well, I allow that's I one of those jokes that I just do all the time. I've gotten to the point where I have to I did it earlier this episode before people write us and tell me, you did it. I let myself do it like every 2 months. The it's true. And that includes, I think, from when I'm playing bar trivia. So. And I usually do use it on this show. Outman will qualify as a rookie this season. So today's trivia question is all about LA Dodger rookies. There we go. Hitting home runs. Are you ready?
Oh my. Okay. Sort of. Yeah.
It was 30 years ago when Mike Piazza hit 35 home runs in his rookie season. Prior to that season, three other Dodgers hit 20 or more home runs as a rookie. I almost said Rocky, which is very funny. Can Eric name these sluggers who hit those home runs prior to the 1993 season?
Okay, so Eric Karros hit exactly 20 in 1992.
That's correct.
Oh, God. And then it gets weird. So I'm having a real, like, just absolute blind spot here, but like what I'm trying to think of is, oh man, 20. So I think I'm probably messing this up, but I'm just gonna take a stab and say Jim LaFever.
Nope.
So I get a few of these guys always mixed up, but what about Ted Sizemore?
Nope. Two strikes. Mm-hmm. One more. One more strike to give.
So, okay. What about, see, this is all, I don't have that much confidence in this either. Joe Ferguson.
No, I'm going to peek at something real quick. I'm going to not give you one of the names because I'm going to hold it off for sure. A later question. One of the names you missed was Greg Brock.
Yeah. All right. So 1983, like 23.
Yep. And like I said, I'll keep the other name under wraps for now. Since 2003, nine LA Dodgers have hit between 10 and 19 home runs in their rookie season. Can Eric name six of those nine players?
Nice. Yes. No, I don't know if I can. But the first two that came to mind. So Russell Martin and Andre Ethier in 2006.
Yes.
So 2003. So you got to remember, Kemp had this 2006 come up, but I don't think he didn't hit enough. Oh, God. So I'm going to say James Loney because I think 2007 was his rookie season.
You are correct.
I believe he hit 15 and never hit that again in a full season. It was a half season. Okay, so then we're talking. So Seager got into the 20s. Cody Bellinger famously hit into the 30s. I'm possibly stalling. Let's see. Yasiel Puig get 19.
Yep.
2013. Oof.
You have four names. Okay. Only need two more.
Oh man. So I'm just mentally cycling through these years. Ooh, man. Oh boy. Let's see. No. That's not gonna work. Who else was? I'm having a tough time.
I can give you years if you want. Of home runs hit.
You know what? Let's do the number of home runs hit and see if I can. If you give me like one or two of them, and then I'll, one of them.
Leading the pack is 15 home runs.
15. Well, James Loney, I get him twice. 15 since 2003. Yeah.
Also one of the most recent players on the list.
Oh. no. Okay, but actually that got me thinking.
Yeah.
Jason Worth?
No.
2004 is probably not a rookie. What about Hsiao Choi?
13? Nope.
Probably wasn't a rookie. these are dumb qualifications that they should have counted.
Obviously. You've got one more shot.
Okay.
Gotta name two names.
Do I really have to? So if we're doing 15 home runs and so no, he wasn't considered a rookie. Will Smith.
Will Smith hit 15.
I think I'm tapping out.
All right, I'm going to give you one more hint for your last one. Someone did it the same year as Will Smith.
In 2019. So I guess it's probably Alex Verdugo.
It is Alex Verdugo. There you go. The three you missed were Trace Thompson.
Oh, man.
Alex Guerrero. 13. And David Ross.
He hit 10, I believe.
Yeah, on the dot. Yeah. All right. Third question. Five LA Dodger Rookie of the Years have hit 20 or more home runs. Who are these sluggers? I will let you know. Included on this list is the one of the players you did not get in the first question.
Oh.
And to remind you, the first question was rookies do have hit 20 or more home runs prior to Mike Piazza.
Okay. So Corey Seager's one. Yep. Bellinger's one.
Yep.
And this is, I mean, this includes Piazza, I'm assuming?
It does.
Okay. So then Raul Mondesi only hit 16. Oh, Karros hit 20.
Yeah. So you already stated the fact of one of them.
So you're listing
the one name from the first question.
Right. Is that since Piazza?
Prior to Piazza. You're missing the one player prior to Piazza.
Got it. Sachs obviously didn't hit 20. Then it's pitcher. Question is punishing you. Yeah, it really is. I don't even know if that's a hint, but shut up. Let's see. And then Frank Howard.
There you go, Capital Punisher. It was a hint. See, I'm so nice.
That's really good.
James Outman and Miguel Vargas will try to join six other LA Dodger rookie duos who each hit 10 or more home runs. Can Eric name those hard-hitting pairsomes? Pairsomes. That's a great word.
Since I just really am struggling on this, I'm playing the memory game now and saying Will Smith and Alex Verdugo, 2019. Andre Gethier and Russell Martin, 2006.
Yeah.
And how are there four others?
You want the years?
This is. Yeah, let's just do that because otherwise, it's just me.
2016. Both players have been mentioned already so far.
Okay, so obviously Seager's one. I honestly do not remember the other player mentioned, but I'll try to talk myself through it.
Current Dodger.
What? I don't... What?
Not continuously, but currently a Dodger.
Wow, this is so dumb because it doesn't make sense that why is this
hit three home runs on Saturday?
That would be the one who previously mentioned. Yeah, Trace Thompson. All right, 13 home runs, whatever, half season.
Sure. 2015.
Come on. That one was Kike one of them?
Nope.
Like 10 on the money? 2015. Okay.
One player hit 11.
Sure.
One player hit the 26.
26 home runs for the 2015 Dodgers, and I'm having trouble thinking of this person. Okay, so 15, they had Jimmy Rollins at short. They had Adrian Gonzalez at first. They had Yasmani Grandal at catcher, not a rookie. They had already traded Kemp. So they had Yasiel Puig in the outfield. And other outfielders who I can't remember. And, this is sad. So, oh god, that was when they were cycling through guys like Chris Heisey played for them and Justin Reggiano, but they didn't play enough to do that. 2015, trying to walk myself through the playoffs, they lost to the Mets that year because someone didn't cover third base in game five. But still trying to...
Thinking of October in this player is probably a good idea. Not necessarily that October, but...
What?
What? Outfielder?
I don't... Yeah, okay. All right. Oh, so, okay, 2015, Jock.
There you go.
He made the All-Star team.
You got 2006 already. All right, I'm going to give you, if you just want to give up, you can just tell me.
But wait, but who was the other one in 2015? Because I only named one.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Here's a hint, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
The other player I saw play in the game I went to in Japan, playing for the Giants in Tokyo.
Sure.
He had a chant. You want to know the chant? A hint. You know what the chant is.
Yeah. Well, if it's 2015, I am just drawing an absolute blank.
The chant for this player was home run, go, Ray, row. Alex Guerrero. Wow.
See, I don't, what did he get 10 on the dot?
12, right? Is that what I said? Sure. 11.
Okay.
1983.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Greg Brock.
Yeah.
And... Oh man, is no. Oof.
I think you can get this.
I see. Okay. So Guerrero's playing like third ish. Sax is at second. Soja's catcher. The shortstop's never hit home runs. Oh no, 83 was not. Wait. I would have guessed a lot of money that Mike Marshall was a rookie in 1982.
You would be wrong.
Oh, so Mike Marshall. Yeah, then.
And okay. I'm looking at what is the plate appearance? What's the
130 at bats?
So he had 137 plate appearances, but
nice.
Only yeah. 120. Ooh, on the right there.
Yeah.
All right, 1960, last pair.
So that's Frank Howard and I guess Ron Fairley.
Not Ron Fairley.
He's 59. Okay. Willie Davis?
Almost.
No, he wouldn't have been. Tommy.
Yeah.
Man, this what a brutal ringer that was of questions.
Made me feel.
Yeah.
Brought me joy. All right.
Deserved. Yeah.
For the contest, how many games in April? I hate number games. Will the Dodgers play in equal or? Oh my. Okay, hold on. What? I'm going to reword this slightly because I'm confused. Equal or less? I'm in math class again. All right, it's a number in April. How many games will the Dodgers play at less than 2.5 hours or on the money 2.5 hours?
Okay, so 2:30 or shorter. So
these games
you,
have been snappy.
So far, it's they're 2-2 in that regard. Wait, I think. Hold on, I will check because I might be. Man, I wish I would have paid attention to this and checked.
As an aside, if you have not talked about it already, and we have not, thoughts on the pitch clock?
I like it.
Yeah, I've been saying like you know. I very rarely say kudos to MLB. Here I am. It feels like they nailed the numbers.
You do in fact have to hand it to them. Yeah. Is what you're saying.
I very rarely do I think that pitcher should have had more time or the batter should have had more time, but it feels the perfectly paced.
Okay, so I think overall like overwhelming success. I think generally. Yeah. Because basically all you're cutting out is the fluff.
Yeah.
However, I think a couple players have said this, and I think it's more, it's not like they're complaining. It's more they realize it's something they're going to have to get used to, because I think in some cases they feel rushed. Like Miguel Rojas on Friday when they lost 2-1, he had like a line drive that probably would have been an RBI single. It just was hit right at Nick Ahmed at short. But he was talking about, not that that was the reason he made the out, but he was just like, he's like, to be honest, that was it's a lot to you know, it's so fast, like he just mentally,
I think there's going to be some weird edge cases that come up this year, maybe even next, where they have to like, oh, we didn't really think about that, either because the optics are bad or a player, they need to be slightly more allowances for sort of unique situations. But one, a lot of those did get ironed out in the minors, and it's fine to get that for overall a positive thing for almost all fans. I know some, I liked slow baseball, but I had my limits. There were definitely moments with Kenley or Pedro Baez where I'm just like, Giovanni Carrera, the OG slow pace pitcher, where I'm just like, throw the ball, just throw it. Just talking to people who I know who are fans of baseball, it's slightly more casual. They love it. We brought Eleanor to the Royals game, and just knowing that it is almost certainly under 3 hours, or has a really high likelihood of being under 3 hours, is just really nice to bank on.
I will say, and this is not relevant to this like discussion, except for me personally, is that as someone writing about the games, that I found my pace is way off. Like I'm thinking, oh, I need to start writing, and then I'm like, oh, this is ending soon. Like, you know, I have to get this in gear here. But like, this is sort of a funny thing.
Now that said, it's going to make me hate the runner rule even more.
Because
like now it's like, this is the opportunity for extra innings I got to go to a 3.5 hour baseball game. Neat.
Yeah.
And this is really weird.
Related to the pitch clock, and it's not exactly that, but is the mound disengagement / pickoff limit.
Mm-hmm.
It really can, for the right team, like lend itself to them trying to run more. And I think overall steals are way up, but like it's really early, so it's not really sure. But like I will say, the Diamondbacks, they are a very fast team, and they tried to take advantage whenever they could, you know. And to be fair to the Dodgers pitchers, like they just didn't allow the Diamondbacks to be on base.
Oral mentioned this on one of the replays at second base. I don't know. He suggested that letting runners run through second and third. I don't know if that's the rule, but I think something to counteract the you can't run full speed. You kind of have to slow down. You have to stay on the base, and you need to not get hurt, but you also need to avoid the tag. It's a little awkward, especially with replay, where like, you know, if you're up, if your tummy jumps up centimeter and the glove's applied, you're out. And I don't know what it is, but I feel like that to make the running game, because the running game is exciting, and I'm all for slight rules to incentivize that. And I think that's one thing they're going to need to think a little bit more about to find the right rule for it.
The millimeter off the bag, like vertically when you're like already there, that's like lawyer ball to me. I think Craig Goldstein has shared this a lot. I don't remember if it was his idea originally, but he shared it so much that I sort of associated with him. But I believe his thing was just once a player has like secured the base or whatever, he's allowed like a hypothetical cone, like straight up.
Yeah.
And you can sort of, as long as if you pop up off the bag a little bit, as long as you're like still there, it's not like you're off the base, like, you know, left or right or whatever. You're still safe. But I don't know. I don't know how that's enforced, but also I think we're getting straight. The other thing about the pitch clock, I will say, so in spring training, especially like on Sports Center LA and for teams in Arizona, the only stadium in Arizona that's like wired for like broadcast and like StatCast is Salt River Fields, where the Rockies and Diamondbacks play. Every other field is like older, doesn't have that technology. So when you saw Sportsnet LA, for instance, they decided to put the pitch clock in their score bug. But in spring training in most stadiums, it was just a camera focused on the stadium pitch clock, which looked very weird. I will say it's way more seamless the way they have it now, except for one thing, but because it's just wired now. So like they're just running the clock that's on display at the stadium, but it's in like the same font. So it's not, like it's not staring at you when you're watching a game on TV, but I think this was Saturday's game. I saw some people tweeting about it. Maybe it was Friday. I don't remember, but Sportsnet LA was not only had it in the score bug, but they superimposed like basketball free throw lane style shot clock on the back of the mound. But I, it was like also not fully in sync with the one on the scorebook, which is that's its own thing. But like, getting back to Craig's question. So far, four games. Saturday was 214, which a 10-1 game.
Yeah.
But the other two games have been right on the line, 232, 235, 241. So far, only 1-for-4, 230 or less. There are 29 total games in April, so 25 more. Or I'm including the two in March.
Yeah, please do. I'm not doing that. Technically, I haven't had any.
But to be fair, neither of those got 230, so it wouldn't affect our total. So I will... You want me to go first? I don't care. It doesn't matter.
It's going to be 10.
Okay, I was going to say 12 either way. There we go. Like, all right, so 230 or less. I say 12, you say 10. Great. We're both right. It's going to be 11, obviously.
The NBA is thinking about a minimum game amount for year-end awards. Should MLB consider something like that, or do the baseball writers already do a good job on handling that aspect of the award-winning season?
The Baseball Writers Association of America is flawless and has impactful decision-making. No, because I think the most noticeable of the awards that like are... You know, less overtime. Like I think Willie McCovey won Rookie of the Year with in half a season because he was so dominant or whatever. I think you could still make an impact.
NBA is fighting the load management issue and the optics of that baseball doesn't really deal with. So,
but also like it's a weird thing because like. You know, I think that maybe the example for this was 2 years ago when Corbin Burns won the Cy Young. And he had it was 50 maybe less innings than Zach Wheeler. And you could sort of make an argument for either one. Burns was dominant in his, sub 2 ERA in his time, but he also barely qualified for the ERA title or whatever. So, but I think that's just a value judgment at that point. Yeah. You're not, you could be, it's almost like a closer too, right? Like, let's say if a closer was so great and closers have won MVP or Cy Young, they're not achieving the minimum. What minimum would you set it at? I think you have to include. So yeah, I don't think there's really a need for that.
Clayton Kershaw pitched his 40th game of 9 or more strikeouts and 0 walks. He has now done that at least once from the 2010 season through the 2023 season. I think it is fair to say that the three of us have not seen another Dodger pitcher start a game as many times as we've seen Kershaw on the mound. What is your outlook on Clayton Kershaw for the 2023 season? I mean, I drafted him in my fantasy league.
Sure.
That's high watermark. I mean, I feel like generally we've gotten, since the back problems have started, he's been really close, just an extremely dominant pitcher, doesn't have quite the velocity, which I think has led to kind of this. He's going to give up one or two home runs a game. He'll still get a shutout, I'm sure. Not a shutout, but they'll probably not let him go that long, but he could. Some games he won't, but he's going to go 0-1 or 2. How about that? Home runs most games. They're going to be hit really far when they hit. But he'll move on and not really let a lot of other batters on and be really good and probably be out.
I will say
more of the year.
Yeah, he started 22 games each of the last 2 years. So I was looking. I think he's actually gotten better at the home runs because he was, he allowed he had never allowed more than 16 in a year. Then in 2017, he allowed 23, so that was a big deal. He also had missed time that year.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2019, he allowed 28 home runs, but he also had a 3.03 ERA, right? He was still good. But now, last year, he allowed 10 home runs in 22 starts. The year before, 15. So, and last year, he was great. 2021, he was he had a 3.55 ERA, which for him is like astronomically high. But also, like, part of that was like he had the elbow thing, but he was also kind of fading a little bit. So I think that was part of it. But like, yeah, he's been really good. So I will say I've been tracking this for a while. So has John Wiseman. So his WHIP is well, if you just round it now, it's 1.000, but it's actually the total number of walks plus hits is 2588, and he has 2587 innings. So I don't have it in front of me, but I believe the last time his career WHIP after a start was one or under was like 2019 or something. I do have a chart where I have this career WHIP after every single start. So I've been like sort of tracking this. I think it's happened like something like 8 or 9 total times. And it was during the, you know, obviously like the dominant era. But like, that's crazy. It's like the lowest WHIP. I believe like Mariano Rivera is like a little lower, but also doesn't have the innings. Like, right. So, yeah, I don't remember Craig's question except for,
What is your outlook? What do you think?
Yeah.
Cy Young? Why not? Cy Young. No, done. We just talked about it. There's no minimum.
That's true. So when he put, so I guess when he puts up like a 1.34 ERA and 22 starts, yeah, sure. Why not?
Clayton Kershaw, Cy Young winner.
Done.
Starting opening day next season. And then next season, he'll cross 3,000 strikeouts. There. That's what I think.
What if he does it this year? Then it'll definitely win Cy Young because he'll have 185 or whatever he needs. Yeah.
Easter is next weekend, and for some, that means baskets with various kinds of candies in them. You're shaking your head no.
No, I was looking ahead at the rest of the question.
Oh, okay. I wonder if we're going to see eye to eye on this.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorites? Those small chocolate eggs, Reese's eggs, Cadbury eggs, Peeps?
Are we going to see Peeper on this? Because Peeps are disgusting.
Yeah, the word that was in my I have a lot of words all negative.
It's like look, all candy in some form is like a sugar bomb, but that is it's like almost literally you're just like cotton candy has more integrity than Peeps.
Like, yeah, I like it's candied plastic. It's just gross.
I will say Peeps has value for one reason and one reason only, and it sucks. I can't even utilize this because I don't own this device at the moment. I only have a toaster oven.
Oh, you know the microwave.
But if you stick Peeps in a microwave, it is fun to watch them blow up. But it's like you know how if you go to like any sort of, you know, it's not always grocery store. Sometimes it's like a drugstore where they'll have like the offshoot candies that were popular in like 1938 or whatever.
Sure.
And you know, like Circus Peanuts for one, which is just like the most base level, like gross, like factory candy you could possibly have. That's like Peeps, but like they didn't try as hard or something. Like it's just so wrong. Like, I don't like the consistency. Yeah. Of it.
My daughter does have a Peep, stuffed animal that is very cute and very soft. So yeah, I'll say that's two things that Peeps have. My wife and my stepfather both love Peeps, and they really? Have you heard of this? They what they call season them. Have you heard of this? They no. Which is what they mean is they take it out of the package and they let it stale out.
So, congratulations this Thanksgiving when your family makes Peep stuffing
or sweet potato casserole with Peeps in it instead.
Potato casserole. You know what? I'm on board now with that name.
So we got that out of the way. Let's talk about the good stuff.
So I will say this. I don't remember what exactly is inside of Cadbury eggs.
It's the sugar cream thing.
But I remember not liking that.
It's
inside.
You were talking about overly sweet. It is sweeter than sugar somehow.
Yeah.
I used to when I was a kid. My favorite candy as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And I think some of that was because they were so special. You only got them on Easter. But I just remember thinking this is so sweet.
Yeah.
There's so much sugar. This is great. And I've since I still like to have one a year just because it is so nostalgic. But I, at the same time, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's sweet. Now, that said, it is the Cadbury mini eggs, though, are very, very addictive and very, very yep. good. And I don't know why they are, because it should be, you know, a fancy M&M. Is the
ratio different?
Yeah, it's something. I don't know if it's the chocolate sweeter or the ratio is different. Or the shell, I think, is sweeter than like an M&M to me, at least. Mm-hmm. But, you know, really, those amongst my favorites for sure.
So I think the Reese's eggs are probably the way to go. Just that combo.
I mean, they're just Reese's. They're not special right. enough to me.
But I think, though, there might be like maybe not in the eggs, but some of the other holiday offshoots, like I think there might be a little more chocolate in
those. I could see the ratios being different yeah. across the board, but they're yeah. it's close enough that compared to the others, I'm just
for gonna... sure. Like the Reese's, like probably the Christmas tree for the Reese's, like that's probably that might be the best version of the offshoot. But yeah, it's the small chocolate eggs are fine, but it also is just like that's a lot of chocolate in like a very thick bite. Whereas like I usually don't like a pure milk chocolate candy bar. I'm trying to think what is the pure milk chocolate candy bar, because the ones I enjoy usually have like something else in them, like Nestle Crunch or Mr. Goodbar.
Just like a Hershey's bar is. Yeah.
Oh, like a, yeah. So I don't really do yeah, that.
No.
And so, but having the egg, I mean, it's small enough to be fine, but like it's also the bite itself is like just this big hunk of chocolate, and yeah. like that's a lot to take. So I kind of like, I think of all that, I think Reese's is probably the way
yeah.
to go. Although I think the Cadbury Minis is probably fine too. Like,
well, so, and I, to clarify there, it does get confusing because there are the Cadbury Mini Eggs, which are what I'm talking uh-huh. about, chocolate shell. And then there is the Cadbury Mini Cream Egg. So it should think the cream egg, but tinier. And that's mm-hmm. actually, it, still, I'm going to take the other mini eggs, but that's better because you have less of the super sweetness in the middle. And those are really good too.
Oh yeah, well that's probably good then.
You should yeah. seek one of those out. And yeah, I little behind the scenes, you and I, we can see each other on our little video chat. Our listeners can't. When you started hating on Peeps, I did a little Kirk Gibson fist pump. So
yeah, I'm glad.
We didn't have to get in an argument about that, because
peeper to peeper on that one. Well, so we usually leave this like an episode very hungry because we're talking about food. Like I'm not going to go out, because we're recording this on a night. I don't think I'm going to go out and go purchase like some chocolate candy or something right
no,
now.
No, but you know what? I think this might linger, especially if you go the Monday after Easter to a pharmacy and there's just
oh yeah
discounts galore. You, yeah. You know what? Craig was onto something here.
You know what I would try is I guess this is what you could use the Hershey chocolate bar for. Get some graham crackers, get a Hershey chocolate bar, you know, portion it out. And instead of a marshmallow, put a peep in there. And that's your s'more. And you will taste disappointment. but yeah, that's it for us this week. There's going to be another episode later this week, but our next, like, regular weekly episode is probably going to come out after Easter, so maybe we'll have an Easter candy review next week. Not that we're promising that. Could be that.
Fun. I mean, we're not going to eat yeah. Peeps. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's our review of Peeps. They suck.
but yeah, maybe we can do a little collection of the rest.
Yeah. Oh, and also another thing that sucks about Easter grass, that like fake plastic stuff. Yeah. I remember it's a weird thing to do, but I think I was probably 11 or 12, and I got 30. Mad at my mom. Yeah. Because she had the, like the standard, like, here's your little basket of Easter stuff.
Yeah.
And, but I was like, why is there all this dumb grass in here? And I think after that, she never put it in again. Like, so, hey, you know what I'm saying? Bullying works. I think that's the lesson here. but yeah, we're going to have a full week of Dodger baseball to talk about next time, as opposed to just a long weekend, but however it plays out, we will be here to talk about it. Thank you for listening, everybody. This is the 3-Inning Save Podcast. We are part of the Fans First Sports Network. We will talk to you next week.